Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
My name is Mike Clear, and just a little quick bio with me information. About 12 years ago, I moved out from the East Coast in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and I was a part of a church plant in Simi Valley, California, which is about an hour north of here, Discovery Church, and I was in charge of the family ministry program, so it was from birth all the way to college. I was the staff, that was it, it was me, like when you plant a church, like you do everything, right? And so, but I was there for just over 10 years, and got to hire our team and build our strategy, and it was incredible to see what God did through that through the church there in our community to reach families. And then about 2 years ago, I left there and moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm a part of the Rethink Group, or you might know it as Orange, and we are an organization that helps churches win with families, and we create multiple resources. We have curriculum, we do conferences and tours, we have books and music and all sorts of things that we want to come alongside churches and help them win with preschoolers and elementary and middle school and high school and marriages and everything. So that's kind of what our organization is about. Specifically with our organization, I work with our elementary division, and so that is our 252 basics curriculum. So from kindergarten through fifth grade, I work with our writers and our musicians and our videographers and all that to help put together resources for churches. So that's a little bit about me. And so what I want to do today is that I want to share with you some things. I've got some, I'm going to call them gauges, and I'll kind of unpack why we're going to call them gauges. And I have five things, but I actually have six because I like you guys, and I threw in a bonus one to do that. But what I want to do to start off our time today is that I want to sit here and talk about this thing called strategy. And the reason why I want to start off talking about strategy, because I think that a lot of churches, we are notorious for talking about our mission. And there's nothing wrong with our mission, but we become enamored with our mission, and we don't ever spend enough time talking about strategy. And I think one of the best things that you can do for your volunteers, one of the best things you can do for your parents in your church, is to spend an enormous amount of time talking about, debating, and discussing this idea of strategy. So I want to talk about mission for a second, because that is important, but then we're going to talk about strategy and how this relates to the gauges, okay? So I want games, right? You like games? I like games. And there's a children's ministry tip for you. Don't play a game without a prize. Like, what's the point, right? I mean, oh, I have a prize. Yes, I have a prize. So here's what's going to happen is that I'm going to give you the mission of an organization, and then if you know what that organization is, I want you to raise your hand. If you get it correct, I have a prize for you. Okay? Fair enough? Got it? All right. Honor system here. I'll do my best. If you know, if we have a tie, I only have one prize. You'll have to wrestle for it. All right? So here is the, let me turn on the clicker, and then we'll get going here. Okay. Here is, let me see. Come on, baby. There we go. All right. Here we go. Serve only the highest quality product, prepare it in a clean and sparkling environment, and serve it in a warm and friendly manner. Whose mission statement does that belong to? Raise your hand if you know the answer. Yes, sir?
Chick-fil-A.
Not Chick-fil-A. Good guess, though. Good guess. Serve only the highest quality product, prepare it in a clean and sparkling environment, and serve it in a warm and friendly manner.
In-N-Out?
In-N-Out. Yes, sir. Congratulations. Woohoo! And for you, I have an In-N-Out t-shirt.
Okay? Oh, yeah. So,
there you go. Now, I'm going to assume, I know not everybody is from this area, but you have been to In-N-Out Burger, yes?
Yeah.
And if you have not, shame on you, number one. No. And number two, for dinner tonight, you need to go to In-N-Out. It's about 2 miles away from here. You need to order the double-double with spread only, fries, and a chocolate shake, and you cannot go wrong with that, okay? The best burgers in town. Is In-N-Out, that is their mission statement. So I have another mission statement for you. I want you to guess the name of this. Now, I don't have a prize for this one. I've only come with one prize, I'm sorry, but this will be obvious as why I don't have one, all right? Here's your mission. Then Jesus came to them, and he said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me, so you must go and make disciples of all nations, baptize in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teach them to obey everything I've commanded you, and you can be sure that I am always with you to the very end. That is the mission of?
The church.
The church, that's right. Now, I know I'm talking to church planners, and you're like, oh, that's so like old school, like we're new school church planners, so here's our mission statement. Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, right? And that's the first and greatest commandment. The second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. Regardless of which of those, each of those two scriptures there. They give us our mission for what we are supposed to do as a church. But, again, as churches, we get enamored with mission statements, and we spend time crafting and wordsmithing mission statements. So they're catchy, and they're rhyming, and they're all this stuff, and they're beautiful to put up on a wall, or put up on a screen, or put on a t-shirt, and all that. But we don't spend the time necessary to talk about how we are going to accomplish that mission by using strategy. So what do I mean by the word strategy? Strategy is simply this. I'm going to say strategy is a plan of action. Hi, come on over here. You're good. You're fine. A plan of action with an end in mind. Strategy is a plan of action with an end in mind. This means that you have simply identified what you want someone or something to be. That is, you're good. You're fine. You have identified what you want someone or something to be. That is your mission. And then you have used your creativity and your intellect to devise a way of how you are going to accomplish that. And that is your strategy. Now, don't forget, like in the story of Nehemiah, Nehemiah didn't just have a clear-cut mission from God to go back and rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. Nehemiah also had a strategy that allowed him to rebuild that wall in 52 days. And here's what I want you to remember is this. Ultimately, it is the effectiveness of your strategy, not the scope of your mission, that determines success. Ultimately, it is the effectiveness of your strategy, not the scope of your mission, that will determine success. And we'll say it another way. If your mission is what you are going to do, then your strategy is how you are going to do that. Okay? If your mission is what you're going to do, this is what God has called us to do in our community, then your strategy is how you are going to do that, okay? So let's go back to our friends at In-N-Out for just a second, because I love their hamburgers. You have a shirt now, so you must love them too, okay? So In-N-Out's mission, if you remember, is to serve only the highest quality product, prepare it in the cleanest, sparkling environment, and serve it in a warm and friendly manner. That is quite the mission, right? But that mission is not unique. That mission is probably somewhat similar to McDonald's and Burger Joint. But In-N-Out doesn't just have a mission, they also have a strategy. And their strategy is made up of some things called values. In-N-Out has a set of values that they come back to time and time again, and these values, they guide them. These values serve as a strategy to accomplish their mission. So we're going to talk about their values real quick, okay? The founders of In-N-Out, their first value is this: keep a relentless focus on quality. Keep a relentless focus on quality is one of the values of In-N-Out. And Harry and Esther Snyder were the founders of In-N-Out, and they were notorious micromanagers in their business because they always insisted on the freshest produce, the freshest beef patties, the freshest products when it came to their restaurants because they wanted to keep a relentless focus on quality. A second value of In-N-Out is this, is that they say you need to listen to your customers. Listen to your customers. And Harry and Esther, they always held their volunteers, or not their volunteers, they have their employees in high esteem, and they always paid them higher wages than other competitors, and they referred to them as associates to help them feel better connected to the organization. So they listen to their customers in doing that, okay? Treat employees well. Listen to your customers. I got that backwards, so sorry. Listening to your customers is that one of the mottos that Harry had was that our customers are everything. Our customers are everything. And so that motto led to the company policy of that they would prepare hamburgers specific to their customers' requests. So in doing that, they adopted some of their customers, their requests for how they wanted their hamburger prepared were so popular that they became a part of In-N-Out's secret menu. Do you know about the secret menu? Have you ever ordered from the secret menu? Like you have to go dig for it and find it, but it's there, and you can get some crazy stuff on your hamburger that way. And it's all there. You won't see it on the regular menu. It's on the secret menu. But In-N-Out, because they listened to their customers, were able to offer a menu selection that could not be copied by any other burger joint out there, okay? And they did that because they listen to their customers. Now, the value number three, treat employees well. Everything I just said earlier is that they held their employees in high esteem. They paid them higher wages. They referred them as associates. They valued their employees. Number four, keep things simple and consistent. Okay? Keep things simple and consistent. Harry had another motto where he said, keep it simple, do one thing, and do it the best you can. Keep it simple, do one thing, and do it the best you can. When you walk into an In-N-Out restaurant, what do you see on the menu? Hamburger. Fries, yeah, you can get a single, you can get a double, fries and a drink. That's it. There ain't no salad, okay? There ain't no fruit cups. There is none of that. They do one thing. They do hamburgers, and they do it really well. So keep things simple and consistent. Another value is expand slowly and only under the right conditions. This is bad news for us. Okay, expand where I live at in Atlanta, Georgia right now because they have some of the strictest guidelines for expanding their stores. And the reason why they do that is because they have these strict guidelines so that they can ensure the success of every new store that they do open. For example, they won't ever open a store 500 miles outside one of their commissaries where they purchase their beef patties or their produce or everything else that they use because of their first value. They want to keep a relentless focus on quality, okay? And then the last value is they define their own level of success. And you kind of heard some people talk about this already at this conference. And in a world where success can be defined at, you know, how much money you make and expanding at all costs, In-N-Out has kind of written their own set of rules. And in their eyes, as long as their customers and their employees are happy and they have made the best product they can possibly make, they have been successful in their own eyes. And here's what In-N-Out, why they are so successful in accomplishing their mission, because they understood this. Ultimately, it is the effectiveness of your strategy, not the scope of your mission, that determines success. If your mission is what you're going to do, then your strategy is how you are going to do that. So, let's go back to the church for a second. We all have pretty much same mission, right? We say it in different ways, we craft it in different ways, but here's what I want you to think about, okay? In terms of your strategy, if In-N-Out, their strategy came from the values that they have as an organization, what are your values as a church? What are the things that you hold dear as a children's ministry or as a church overall in your community? What are the things that you hold dear to? What are the things that you fight for? What are the things that set you apart from any other organization in your community? Now, I'm going to assume you all have the value, the spiritual value, right? There's God's word. Like God is the Father, Jesus is Son. He sent him into this world because we're sinners. And when we accept him, we receive eternal life. He gets the Holy Spirit. Like, we get that. That is a value for all of us. But what else about your church makes you distinct and unique? And when you started your church, why did you start your church in your community? Or if you accepted a position at an existing church, what was it about that church that was so unique, that was so just so like compelling that you were like, I want to be a part of it. Here is what God has called us to do. And then once you identify what those values are, and they should be different somewhat because we are all different and we come from different backgrounds and different churches and different experiences. But once you identify whether you have six or whether you have three or whether you have more than that, those are the things that you need to come back to time and time again. And you need to have a strategy where you can systematically come back and talk about what those values are, debate what those values are, emphasize what those values are, you know, vision cast what those values are and think are important to talk about. Now, you can call the values what you can call them values, you can call them big rocks, you can call them gauges. I'm going to refer to them as gauges. And I think gauges are important because gauges are something that you constantly have to monitor, right? Like, I flew here on an airplane, and I'm thankful the pilots, they paid attention to the gauges on the airplane, right? As far as altitude, as far as pressure, as far as all this stuff. And paying attention to those gauges got our airplane exactly where it needed to be. And on the way over here today, I drove in a vehicle that had gauges that I had to pay attention to. The speed gauge, the fuel gauge, because no matter what my intention was to get here to be able to do this today, if I didn't pay attention to those gauges and I let that fuel gauge go down to empty, I'm going nowhere, right? So gauges are something, it's not a one-time thing that you talk about and print it on a wall and you walk away and never come back to and talk about. A gauge is something you have to continually monitor and pay attention to, okay? So let's talk about these gauges right now. And the first one I want to talk to you about is the strategy gauge, okay? A strategy gauge. And when I talk about a strategy gauge, I'm going to talk about it in terms of these right here. Traffic cones. Now, these are not traffic cones. I understand that. This is the poor man's version of a traffic cone right here. This is all I could afford right now. But a traffic cone is designed, and it's amazing when you think about the power of a traffic cone, right? How, like, a few pounds of plastic can direct the direction of, like, you know, a two-ton vehicle. Like, it's amazing. When you just put that right there, and all of a sudden it's like, I don't know what to do, right? But a traffic cone is designed to do what? It's designed to show you where to go. And if you've ever been in a heavy construction area, like where I'm at in Atlanta, they're doing a lot of construction right now, and so there are a lot of these bad boys around there. But traffic cones are designed to tell you where to go, and they're designed to work together to deliver you to the intended destination. Like, I mean, imagine if there's a 10-mile stretch of construction and you only have one traffic cone. Like, that's not going to do you any good, right? That's not going to help you at all. Or imagine if you had several traffic cones, however, they were not in order, but rather they were just randomly put in different places, right? I mean, the result of that in the construction area, it would lead to confusion, it would lead to frustration, and it would lead to unfortunate crashes, right? So, construction workers understand the importance of an integrated strategy to help keep people safe on the road. When we talk about an integrated strategy in your children's ministry, in your family ministry, in your church, it's about integrating two primary influences, the influence of the church and the influence of the home. And it's getting those two influences on the same page, moving in the same direction, headed toward the same destination to accomplish what you want to do in the hearts of the next generation. That means this has to deal with several things in your church. This involves the staff that you work with. This involves the volunteers that you lead. This involves the parents that you influence. This involves how often you work together. This involves what you say when you work together. Like, what do we cover? What do we talk about? I mean, all these things have to do with the strategy. And so when you have a lack of an integrated strategy where everything that you do is pointed to one direction, if this is our mission, what is our strategy to get there? And a lack of an integrated strategy, you know what it's going to cause in your church? It's going to cause the same thing when there's a lack of traffic cones in a construction area. It's going to cause confusion. It's going to cause frustration. And it's going to cause unfortunate crashes. Unfortunate crashes with other staff. Unfortunate crashes with your volunteers, unfortunate crashes with your parents, of your kids in your church, and unfortunate crashes with other ministries. So, that's why it's important to have a strategy gauge and pay attention to that. Okay. The second thing I would say is that you need to talk about your experience gauge. Okay. Your experience gauge. And this has to do with what you communicate and what you communicate to kids on the weekend. And I want to talk to you about in terms of carrots. Who likes carrots? Anybody like carrots? Okay, I don't like carrots. Carrots for centuries were quite the unpopular thing. Up until about the 16th century, they would plant carrots and they would produce carrots that were in different hues. So there would be red carrots, and there would be purple carrots, and there would be black carrots, and yellow carrots, and white carrots, a wide variety of different colors of carrots, right? But not a lot of people liked carrots back then. Until about the 16th century, some Dutch farmers kind of took some of the strands of the red carrot and the yellow carrot together, and they planted those, and they produced the orange carrot. And story goes like they did that in honor of their king, William of Orange, at that time. I don't know if that's true. The internet said it, so who knows? You know, so there you go. But anyways, regardless, more people ate more carrots, and the new modern, what we know as our carrot, was born, okay? And here's the deal. I'm sure back then, when these carrots came on the scene and more people started eating it, I'm sure like the true carrot lovers back then, they probably had some resistance to this change, right? Like, you know, well, wait a minute, that's, you know, those aren't real carrots, or they can't be real carrots because those don't look like what carrots should look like, or those aren't the same type of carrots my parents grew up eating. Like, those can't be like the real thing. But regardless of the changes, look, you can change the color of something without changing the fundamental nature of the carrot. Like, these carrots are as nutritious and as healthy as, or the only difference is that more people were eating carrots now because they changed the color, right? So let me ask you this question. What if I were to tell you more kids would engage with what you teach on weekends if you changed it just a little bit? Because remember, you can change the color of something without changing the fundamental nature of something. And it's okay to teach in a way that kids have fun. And it's smart to use language when you teach, to use language that kids actually use and understand. And it's responsible to believe that how you communicate something may determine whether somebody hears it or not. Andy Stanley, in his book, Communicating for a Change, says how you say what you say is as important as what you say. Let me say it again because it's important. Listen to that. How you say what you have to say is as important as what you say. And when it comes to our words that you communicate, communicating God's word is the task that God has entrusted to us, and it's an important task that we cannot take lightly. And the words that we use, the words that we choose to communicate, can have a lasting impact, or they can have a bad impact, or worst of all, they can have no impact whatsoever. And when you think about Jesus' words, Jesus had a way of having his words make a lasting impact, right? I mean, when you think about the Bible, there's like just over 800,000 words in the Bible. I think in the New Testament, there's just over 600,000. Or in the Old Testament, there's 600,000. In the New Testament, there's like 180,000 words. But yet, only 25,000 of Jesus' words were recorded, right? And so Jesus shows us the principle. You can say less and still make a lasting impact. And even of all of 25,000 Jesus' words, he boiled it down when somebody asked him one day, what is the most important of all of those words? And Jesus boiled those down to a handful, and he said, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And so, here's what I'm saying. It's just this, okay? If kids would engage more with what you have to say, if you changed the way, I'm not saying watering down your message. I'm not saying that at all. Watering down your message is not saying, you know, oh, don't go deep here. Actually, to say less is actually probably going to force you to go more deep with what you have to say to kids. So just think about the experience gauge, okay? Are you crafting core truths into engaging and memorable experiences for kids? So there's that, okay? All right. Second one I want to talk about is this, is the parent gauge. The parent gauge. And here's what I mean by that. I've got a pumpkin, okay? And Halloween is coming up, okay? October 31st is about Halloween, okay? I just want to make some observations. I'm not promoting Halloween whatsoever, but I would just say this. There's something about Halloween that does something to families, at least in my neighborhood. I don't know if you experienced it in your neighborhood, but I have Halloween has a way of capturing the imagination of kids. I have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old. They dress up and play pretend 365 days out of the year. Halloween is an excuse to get together with other kids they know and don't know and play dress up and play pretend and all that. So there's a way that Halloween captures the imagination of kids out there. There's also a thing that Halloween does that engages parents that sometimes are not engaged, right? Like maybe the dad who is distant, the dad who doesn't do much with his kids, but on Halloween, it's like an all-family affair, right? Like everybody comes over. If the grandparents are in town, they come over too, and we all go trick-or-treating, and we all go and get free candy. And also, it has a way of you engaging with your neighbors and your community in a way that maybe you don't usually do, right? I mean, you pull into your driveway, you see your neighbors maybe once a month or whatever, but now on Halloween, everybody's like, hey, how's it going? Hey, good to see you. Hey, let's walk together. Let's do that. And so I'm just making some observations here to say, why can't the church create an environment that captures the imagination of kids and incites a relational revival for families? And so what if we just started thinking differently about the family, okay? And reactivate the family. And when I say reactivate the family, I mean basically getting parents involved in the spiritual formation of their own children. Like, what if we thought differently about that? Because as churches, sometimes we're notorious for using words that have been handed down to us without ever stopping to ask, what does that really mean? Like, think about it. Okay, when we say spiritual leadership, if I were to write that on the board and ask you to come write the definition for that, what would you say? Like, have you ever thought about and typed out a sentence to say, we want you to be the spiritual leader of your kids? What does that mean? Because my guess is most parents out there don't know what that means exactly. Because they may think, you're asking me to be what, Billy Graham? You're asking me to be what, Mother Teresa? And you as a church, you have an opportunity to define what it means to be a spiritual leader in practical and possible terms for these parents. So I'm just saying, think about family differently. And what if you thought differently about, what if you thought that what happens at home is actually more important than what happens at church? That would change the way that you see some of the programming that you do. That would see maybe some of the way that you are spending some of your resources or adding staff. Instead of saying, let's have them come here and come to the church and come and do more and more and more. What if you're like, wait a minute, what if we redirect some of those resources to what we can help parents do at home? Because when you do the math, okay, I don't know if you know this or not, I mean, what I know about most kids, according to the latest statistics out there, is that not every kid goes to church every Sunday. We all know that, right? We all agree on that. In fact, most studies say that you have about 40 hours in a given year to impact the heart and the life of a child, okay? Because when you take away sickness, vacations, sporting events, just plain missing a Sunday, you have about 40 hours in a year to say everything that you want to say to those kids about God, about Jesus, about faith, about forgiveness, and all that. And when you compare that to the amount of hours that a parent has with their child in that same calendar year, not counting the time their kids are sleeping, not counting the time their kids are away at school, a parent still has 3,000 hours of influence in a year with their child. You as a church have 40. So it would probably serve you well to say, we need to rethink some things here. And how can we maybe take some of our resources, take some of our creativity, take some of our intellect, take some of what we're doing and figure out how can we hand off some things to parents so they can do more at home? Because what happens at more is probably more important than what happens here. I'm not degrading what you do at your church. It's like, it's important as well, but it's not the most important thing. Okay? So, again, just rethinking some things about family. Because you can make a decision about family, okay? You can decide that, you know what, most parents don't care. They're not going to do anything, so we're just going to be the spiritual babysitters. You know, just drop them off at our church, and we'll take care of them, and we'll solve every problem that they have, and then we'll give them back to you, and you do the parent thing. You can do that. Or you can continue to ask parents to attain to a standard that is impossible. If you say spiritual leadership, and you don't define that in practical and possible terms, parents will keep shooting for that, maybe. Or most parents will say, I can't do that, and so they hop off and do that. Or you can decide that every parent wants to be a better parent. And every parent I've ever met, Christian or not, I believe they do. Because I have yet to meet the parent that walks out of the hospital with their kid and says, I can't wait to screw this kid's life up. Like, I have yet to meet that parent, okay? Every parent inside of them wants to be a better parent. And according to statistics out there, when they do a survey of parents in the community, the latest study says that 95% of parents, whether they are believers or not, believe they are responsible for the moral development of their children. Okay, like, okay, that's great. And of that same study, it says that 80% of those same parents believe they are responsible for the spiritual development of their own children. And they are looking for help. And they will go to any organization that helps them win as a family. And you have some churches showing up at your church's doorstep saying, I am here. I have children now. I am freaking out. I'm not sure what to do, but I know I'm responsible for the educational development, the moral development. I take them to the doctor to make sure physically they're okay, and I think there's a spiritual element, and I have no idea what to do. And when they come in the doors, the worst thing we can do is like, hey, whip them off, or hey, be a spiritual leader. That's what God called you to do. Read Deuteronomy 6 for a change, okay? And now go do what God's called you to do. And we don't help them with that. So just rethink how you look at parents and how you approach family, okay? The fourth gauge, I would say, is groups gauge. I like basketball. Anybody like basketball? Anybody else in here? Okay. I like basketball. I like high school basketball and college basketball more than the pros a little bit. But here's what I notice about basketball is that a good basketball team, they come together to practice, right? They practice to practice plays, talk about different strategies, to work on their own personal fundamental skills and all that. And the right coach can make all the difference in the world, right? You've seen really great teams with bad coaches not do and live up their standard. You've seen not so great teams with the right coach, and it makes all the difference in the world. And here's the thing is that when next time you watch especially a high school basketball game or a college basketball, not so much NBA because they don't pay attention to the coach because they're millionaires. So they do that. But when you watch the coach, what's the coach doing? Coach is running up and down, you know, the sideline, not the sideline, but, you know, they're running up and down their allowed space. They're yelling plays. They're yelling encouragement, bringing people over, maybe, you know, giving us some one-on-one, doing this. You know, I mean, they are working the sideline. They're sweating, you know, pulling up their tie and doing all that stuff. And when you talk to, like, high school basketball players, some of the high school players I know, they'll tell me sometimes, like, you know, in the middle of a game, they don't hear so much the roar of the crowd. They don't even, you know, hear their parent shouting and screaming, you know, from the stands. What they hear most of the time in the middle of the game that's going on is the solitary voice of their coach who is giving plays, giving encouragement, giving orders, doing all that stuff. And so here's when we talk about groups gauge, we would say that this is where you want to make sure that at some point kids are going to grow up and they're going to start caring more about what other adults than their parents say. Okay, they'll always love their parents, they'll always talk to their parents, but I know my son who is 7 years old, he's already starting to care more about what other people say. He's in a baseball team, he's a baseball coach, his teacher, who he loves, okay? his small group leader at church, Mr. Stan, like, all those people are influences in his life. And so with the group gauge, here's what we know about every kid and about every one of us, really. We all want simply a place to belong and someone who believes in us. Would you agree with that? I want a place to belong, a place where I can belong to, and I want people in my life who believe in me and who speak wisdom into me and who are there for me, okay? And so kids need that as well. And so when it comes to this, we believe that true community can provide both of those things. It can give kids a place to belong, and it can give them someone who believes in them. And when you look at all the stats today from Fuller Institute specifically, back it was the whole 5-to-1 or 1-to-5 ratio. You had one adult leader for every 5 kids. Like, you know, that was your small group ratio that you went off of. Now they say that it's flip-flopped. That is 5 adults for every child. Now, that doesn't mean you have 5 small group leaders for every kid. That's a weird ratio. Okay? That's not going to work at any church in the world. But one of those 5 could be a small group leader. And as a small group leader, if that is you, okay, if you lead a small group of kids, you are in a position to be able to help guide parents and those kids to other adult influences in their life. It could be a coach. It could be a family member. It could be a teacher. It could be somebody. It could be another small group leader. The point is that the more adult influences, trusted adult influences who are saying the same thing that parents would want to say, that the more you can put those in the lives of kids, the better chance they have of developing an authentic faith in their time with you. So, as a church, it's easy to think about the large group time. It's easy to get sucked into the production environment, but I believe the greatest thing you can do is to build an effective small group ministry for kids. And that's what the groups gauge is all about. Okay? All right. The 5th one is the service gauge. And with that, I've got some rope here. And so let me ask you a question. I don't know if any of you, like, climb. You do rock climbing, mountain climbing? Anybody? No? Okay. So I'm going to... Okay. A little bit over here. Okay. I was on a rock once, and that was... Does that count? What do you think is more effective if you attended a class like this every week for a year or two and we talked about mountain climbing and we went over safety concerns and we talked about how, and I diagrammed it out, like you want to go this way because that's how you climb. You want to go up, you don't want to go down. And so to sit in a class where you talk about how to climb a mountain, or is it better to like actually go and climb a mountain and stand at the top of the summit and look at the view of what you just did? Like, what do you think is, what would you rather do? Tell me.
Climb a mountain.
Thank you. It's like, it's not a rhetorical question, guys. Here's the thing, is that with kids, and this is especially for your older elementary age kids, and this goes into student ministry as well, is that we structure a lot of our strategy to bring them into a classroom to talk about faith, to talk about how they need to grow their faith, how God wants them to have big faith, and we talk about faith all the time, but we know one of the best ways to grow in your faith is by experience, right? To actually get messy with the faith. And so when it comes to mountain climbing, I could sit here and say, hang to every week and talk about God and how God has made you to be significant and He wants to do significant things through you and do all that, and then but hey, come back next week and we're going to talk about the same thing. And if you don't give them something significant to do, they're never going to feel significant. Does that make sense? Like we can bring, and I'm not saying, don't mishear me too. I'm not saying don't ever have a class, okay? Don't ever have a small group time. Don't ever have a student ministry time. I'm just saying, when is the appropriate age for kids to start serving? What is the answer to that? In the church. When's the right time for them to start serving? Elementary?
When they can.
Never underestimate, if you work with preschoolers, the power of a preschooler passing out snacks during snack time. Okay? Goldfish crackers, it is easier to get an adult to do that, and it's actually less messier to do that. But if you allow preschoolers to be a part of that, you are starting to lay the foundation of service in their life. And elementary age kids, whether they are kindergarten or first grade, whether it is passing out Bibles, whether it is helping with crafts, as they get older and move into production stuff, maybe it's helping them be a part of a dance team, the worship team, running the computer in the background. As they get into student ministry, it's letting them be small group leaders, to allow your middle school students to be small group leaders for preschoolers, or to allow your high school students to be small group leaders for your elementary age kids. For my son, Mr. Stan is his small group leader, but he has an assistant. His name is Mr. Matt. Mr. Matt is a sophomore in high school. And in my son's eyes, Mr. Matt is so cool. Okay? Like, he thinks he is a rock star. And I can say to my son something over and over and over again about God, and then Mr. Matt will say something, and it's like the light bulb goes off for my son. He's like, guess what, Dad? Did you know that God, blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I'm a pastor. I've been telling you that for years. But he's hearing it from a different voice, and a voice who is investing in his life, and he hears it in a different way. So, I would just say, as you look at your service opportunities, yes, it might be easier to not let kids, especially younger kids, because it gets messier, but the mess is worth it, okay? Because if you give them opportunities, because we sit there and say, if we can give them opportunities to serve with us, and this isn't just like the once-a-year mission trip. This is like consistent opportunities. But if we give them opportunities to serve with us while they are with us, there's a better chance that they will continue to do that once they leave us and go on to whatever is next. I mean, what makes us think that if we don't give them opportunities to do this now, that all of a sudden when they graduate from high school, they're like, oh, well, now they're going to start serving, or now they're going to get into community group, because now that's what adults do, right? I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. It's about laying the foundation up. Last gauge we'll talk about is the personal gauge. The personal gauge. And this has to do, this is a little bit different than these other ones, because you could like master all of these things, and you know, you could go back to your church and like, hey, we're going to talk about pumpkins and basketballs and traffic cones and all this stuff, and I don't know what that means, but that's what the guy said. So you can get all this right and still miss it, okay? Because this has to do with you. And here's what I know about you, is that you lead a ministry, you work in a ministry, and that is something that you are, that's not for everybody. That is something you are called to do because you have a passion to do it, to influence the next generation, okay? But I also know that this is hard, okay? And I know that there are times when we maybe, because you are so good at serving and putting other people's needs above yours, personal needs, developmental needs, whatever it may be, and at the end of the day, sometimes you don't have anything in the tank for you. And so my question for this is just to step back and say, hey, all this is important, but at the end of the day, how are you doing? How are you doing? Because all this stuff that we want for our kids, you've heard this before, this is nothing new, it cannot be in them until it is in you. And you are responsible for you. So when is the last time that you have put your own personal or your own, you know, leadership development, personal development above the needs of your ministry? Okay? So this means several things. Are you in a community group? Okay? Where you have life-giving friendships? Like, the small group that you lead of 4 and 5-year-olds cannot be your community, okay? They are not going to give you fellowship, and they're not going to challenge your faith. And if you work with high schoolers, that's kind of like, yeah, but they're, you know, high schoolers can challenge your faith, and high schoolers can actually be fun to hang out with, but they can't be your community. You need to be in community. You need to be in other relationships where they are, you know, speaking into your life, reading your Bible, sleeping, exercising, eating right. Like, all those things that go into your emotional health, your physical health, and your spiritual health, that is what this personal gauge is all about. Okay? So, these are the 6 gauges we talked about. And again, at the end of the day, if your mission is what you're going to do, then your strategy is how you are going to do that. And this is what I would just leave you with to say this. Okay? I'm going to give you a few more things and we're going to be done. Is that these are the things that it's important to monitor constantly. This isn't one thing where you come back and say, yeah, small groups are up and running, we're done, put the basketball away for the rest of the year. You want to come back to that and say, how are they going? Kids, like leaders with the kids, How are the leaders doing? Are we training our leaders? Are things going well? Are they being effective? Are they doing what we thought they were going to do? Hey, how are we connecting with parents? Because you don't just send out a newsletter or an email or, you know, send out a text and boom, we've connected with parents. No, this is a constant moving target. And one thing may work one time, it's not going to work the next time. You're going to have to constantly evaluate how are we getting parents plugged in to helping lead their kids spiritually. Same thing with service, same thing with your experience. So I would just say here's a few things to kind of help you develop a strategy to be able to come back and talk about all of these things, okay? A few things I would say right here. Improving your strategy, number one, I would say you need to synchronize your team, okay? You need a team. You know this already, but if I need to say that one more time in case you don't know that, you need a team. You cannot do ministry alone. This doesn't need to be a paid team. This can be a volunteer team. But you need to assemble a team, okay? Now, you're like, well, what is this team made up of? I would suggest to you that you start with what we just talked about. When you are looking about who needs to be at the table when we talk about these things, who needs to be that person, my guess is that you probably have somebody in your church who thinks about relationships all the time with the kids. Like, they want to make sure that the kids feel welcome. They want to make sure that the kids are always connected with somebody else. Like, they think about the kids and making sure that they're connected with other people. You probably have somebody who is a relational person who thinks about that. You might be able to go to them and say, hey, would you be a part of a team that I want to get together that we just talk about this aspect of community? And I see that in you, and I want you to help us as a ministry think about that more. My guess is you probably have somebody who thinks about service opportunities all the time. Okay, they're like, oh, we could go to the homeless shelter, or we could go to the food bank, or we could go do this. And you're like, you know what? Those are all great things, and we want to do things outside the church, but we also want to try to create some things inside the church. And you just think about that all the time. Could you be a part of a team that I want to get together that you help us think about this gauge? The family, again, you probably have somebody who is a creative on your team, somebody in your church that they're just like thinking about ways that we could communicate and say the Bible story. We could do this. We could do a visual. We could do a drama. We could do a set. We could do all this stuff. And they'll help you think through what are some of the ways that we could take God's word and communicate it in a way that's going to be most engaging with the kids. So I would say you need to start with the team. The second thing I would say is that you need to have consistent meetings. Once you get your team together, you need to have consistent meetings. Because here's what I know about alignment. Alignment doesn't just happen. Okay? When we talk about strategy and getting everybody going in the same direction, that is not intuitive to human beings. Okay? And a few months ago, I got the tires on my wife's car. We got them changed. And when we did that, the tire guy, he put like a oil change sticker. Like, you know, when you get your oil change, it's like, hey, every 3,000 miles, come back and see us. He put like another sticker, you know, so it was like, I'm like, what's this sticker about? It's like, hey, in 3,000 miles, I want to see you come back here. And what we're going to do is we're going to rotate your tires and then we're going to realign them. And I'm like, wow, I've never, and then it was Costco. So there you go, it's Costco. So and I was like, why would you do that? And he's like, because as you begin to drive, your tires naturally begin to pull apart from each other. So we want to bring you back in here and we're going to realign them to do that. And that's just true in life, right? Like, if you don't spend time with your kids consistently, what happens? You begin to pull apart from your kids. If you don't intentionally work on stuff to do with your spouse where you are doing things together, you are over time going to pull apart from each other. And the same thing is true with your team. If you don't have a team, or if you have a team and you do not meet all the time, what is going to happen is that eventually people are going to start pulling apart. Not intentionally, not like, ooh, I hate you. It's just that you're going to drift off and start doing your own thing. And when you started working towards simplicity, now all of a sudden it's becoming complex. So you need to get a team and have consistent meetings where you are constantly talking about these things that we talked about today, okay? The third thing I would say is you need to establish clear wins. And the question I would have for you is simply this, okay, is who is the person in your church who determines what success looks like for you in your ministry, okay? Who is that person? Because if you are not a part of that conversation to define this is what success is going to look like in our children's ministry, I guarantee you somebody is going to do it for you, okay? And that person might be your executive pastor. It might be a volunteer. It might be a parent, but somebody in your church, if you are not a part of defining and establishing what a clear win looks like, they are going to do that for you. And you can imagine how that's going to go, right? Because if you're not a part of the conversation to say, this is what success looks like for small groups, if you're not a part of that conversation and somebody is measuring your effectiveness to a different standard than what you have in your mind, that's not going to go well, right? So I would just say you need to, as a team, come around and say, what are going to be the wins for this program? Or what is going to be the win for a small group leader? And then you mutually decide what that's going to be, and then you evaluate everything based upon those clear wins. When we started our church, we had a lady named Jan Josker. She was a small group leader for 4th and 5th grade girls. Great, great lady. And the first couple of months of starting the church, I would like walk down the hallway and kind of say, hey, how'd it go today? How'd it go today? How'd it go? And Jan, first time I asked her that question, she's like, oh, it was great. We got through all the material, and it was fun. It was great. It was a great day. And I was like, okay, that's good. Okay. So it's like a couple weeks later, I saw her and said, hey, Jan, how's small group time go today? She's like, oh, it was great. We got through all the material. It was fun. And I was like, why are you saying that? And so about 2 weeks later, again, asked the same question, and sure enough, I got the same answer. And so I stopped and I said, hey, Jan, you know, like, the goal of your small group is not to get through all the material, right? Like, the goal of your small group is to connect with the girls in your small group, to build a relationship with them, to help them apply what we talked about as far as in large group time, what that means in their life, what that means when they go to school, what that means when they go back home. Like, your job is to do that. And so if you get stuck on a discussion question, or if you do an activity where it leads, you know, the girls in your small group to open up and share some things, like, and you don't get to this other stuff, that's okay, because you have accomplished your win, okay? To get through all the material, that's not the win. So I had to go back to her and reestablish this is what it means to win as a small group leader. So you need to be a part of that conversation, whoever makes those decisions. The other thing I would say is that you need to have strategic programming. You need to have strategic programming. Somewhere along the way, we have gotten under the illusion that the more things that we can offer, the better that is going to be. And all of a sudden, we have this issue of complexity, where we have these programs and these things standing all around. And what happens when you have complexity is that things begin to cancel out each other, right? Have you ever been a part of that? To where you have competing programs that compete for volunteers, that compete for resources, that compete for people's time, that compete for stage time. You didn't announce this thing. Well, we couldn't announce everything, so we're going to announce nothing. And so I would just say, instead of sitting there and having random programming for families, think in terms of steps and not programs. That if you have a clearly established mission, this is what God has called us to do, this is what we are going to accomplish, then everything that you do from that point on needs to lead and be a step toward that mission. Not something that's going to take you this way and that way and all sorts of ways and everything but loose, but something that's going to guide you toward your clearly established win. That is what strategic programming will do for you. The other thing we would say is that you need to have systematic training. You need to have systematic training. And part of learning together as a team is being in environments like this. I mean, if you're here today at Exponential and you're here with your team from your church, that is amazing, okay? Because a team that not only, you know, serves together and plays together, but a team that learns together, that helps as well as far as keeping everybody focused, bringing everybody together to remind them, hey, this is what we're doing. Everybody remember what we're about? And so we're going to look at everything and evaluate everything in light of that. Having a systematic training where you bring everybody together and build into them to remind them, here's who we are, here's what we're doing, and here's how we are going to do that. Okay, the last thing we would say, oops, sorry. What happened there? Okay, is the oh, personally, I don't know what that is. All right, anyways, traffic cone, let me do this. Traffic cone, and we'll wrap up. I don't know what happened there. I don't know what you do for your... You just need, there you go. Like the mirror, the SNL sketch, just like, you know... Anyways, that's another thing. That was for free. Okay, so here's an exercise I would leave you with to kind of go back to your churches and do like an honest assessment of where you're at, okay? Is go to Walmart, go to Home Depot, get big traffic cones, get small traffic cones, get cheap plastic cones, get whatever, okay? And go back and assign everything that you do in your children's ministry and give it a cone. So this is Sunday morning. This is Sunday school, if you have it. This is Wednesday night. This is VBS. This is camp. This is our monthly program. This is whatever it is that you are currently doing. I want you to assign everything a cone. Okay? Makes sense? And then what you do is you give your mission a cone too. You say, if this is our mission, we're going to put that right here. And everything else that we are doing right now has a cone. And as a team, I want you to lay it out and say, okay, is everything we are doing leading us to where we want to go? Is everything we are doing a step in the direction of where we want to take families when they come into our ministry? Okay? And is it easy and obvious? Think through the lens of a new church family. If a new church family comes in for the first time and they say, hey, we're here, we just had a baby. Or hey, we're here, we just had a life-changing experience. And we don't know why we're here exactly, but we are here and we know that we need you. And you're like, great, we have a plan for you. Here's what we want to do in your life. Our clearly articulated mission, and let me give you our strategy. Is it easy for them? Or is it like, you know, and we do this over here on this day, and every other month we're over here, and over here we can go to this and this and that. Like, is it easy? Is it obvious? And is it strategic? Okay? So that's a good exercise to go back and do. And then also I would say this, is that if you want to know what is important, because you can sit there and say, hey, look, you know, our mission is important, our strategy is important, and all this stuff you talked about with your pretty little props, that's important too. But here's how you know when something is important to somebody. You know how you know? Two things you look for every time. You ready? Your calendar and your wallet. Isn't that true? Like in life, you can say, well, this is important to me. What do you spend your money on? And where do you spend your time? Your time is your most valuable commodity. And you will not waste your time on stuff that is not important to you, right? And you will not spend your hard-earned dollars on stuff that is not important to you. So, if you say as a ministry, this is what's important. Family is important to us. But if I or somebody else were to come and take a look at your ministry calendar and your ministry budget, would that reflect what your priority is? Small groups are important to us. We absolutely believe, but how much money are you spending in training for your small groups? Or how many training sessions do you have? Do you reward, you know, your small group leaders? Do you have like donuts and do you have like orange juice, you know, and stuff for them? Do you give them gifts of appreciation? Like, you know, well, no, we don't. But they're important, or are they? Okay, so a humbling exercise is to get a new church family and invite them in, say, hey, we'll buy you Chick-fil-A one day, or whatever, and say, hey, here's all of our stuff, here's all of our programming, and lay it out and say, does that make sense to you? Because you're who we're trying to reach, right? Like, I mean, that's really, like, gutsy if you go actually out into your community and find somebody who doesn't go to your church, like somebody you're actually trying to reach, and say, hey, I'll give you $50 if you can come in and do an exercise with us real quick, okay? We just want you to take a look at this. Here's what we want to do with you. Here's what we're trying to do. Does that make sense to you? Like, is that working? You know? So, anyways, you can do that. You can ignore it. It's whatever. Throw it out there for free, okay? Last thing I would say this is that in Made to Stick, Chip and Dan Heath, they did a survey of 23,000 employees from various industries, revealed that only 37% of employees said they had a clear understanding of what their organization is trying to achieve and why. So as we're talking about your mission and your strategy, 23,000 employees surveyed from various industries, only 37% of employees said the organization was trying to do. And you're like, really? Like, I mean, in the job you have, you don't understand what your company is trying to accomplish, right? And so what happens, they took this survey and they put it in a terms that's a little bit fun as far as soccer, any soccer fans? Great. Okay, awesome. That's awesome. That's wonderful. If these employees were on a soccer team, here's what this statistic means right here, okay? Only 4 of 11 players would know which goal was theirs. And they're like, well, that's not good, right? Only 2 of 11 would care. And only 2 of 11 would know which position they played and what they had to do. And then all but 2 players would be competing against their team at some point during the game, right? That's sad, and we laugh about it. But what's so different about our churches? If we don't have a clearly articulated mission statement, what God has called us to do, this is what we are about as a church, and we don't have a clearly articulated strategy of what we are going to do, how we are going to accomplish this mission, what is so different? Because my guess is if you don't have that, then you probably have some small group leaders who still think they're teaching a Sunday school class. And the goal is to teach, not to build the relationship. Or you have some parents in your church who think the church is all about, you know, them. And as far as like, oh, the church is for my benefit to, you know, free babysitting. That's what the church is. If you don't have a clearly articulated mission and strategy to let your parents know, no, this is what we are about. This is what we're trying to do. Here's what we want for you. That is what's going to happen. So at the end of the day, I'm just going to leave it with this and say this, okay? Ultimately, it is the effectiveness of your strategy, not the scope of your mission, that determines success. If your mission is what God has called you to do, your strategy is how are you going to do that. And I would just plead with you to say, get together with the team, talk about these gauges. You can add to these gauges. You can change the names of these gauges. You can add your own props, whatever it is. Whatever the values of your church are, go back and talk about how are these going to show up in us accomplishing what God has called us to do. And get together consistently and constantly debate these ideas, because that is what's going to help you succeed in doing what God has called you to do. Okay? Let me do this. Let me pray for us. And we've got a couple of minutes. If you want to stick around for a Q&A, we can do that at 2:30. If you want to stay in here, that's up to you. But we are going to talk about these two things right here. We're going to talk about how, when it comes to partnering with parents and establishing that connection with them, your greatest tool to do that is your small group leader. And we're going to give you some practical ideas of how you can have your small group leaders connect with the parents in your ministry, okay? So we're going to talk about that at 2:30 in this room, so you can go use the bathroom, take a break, stay for Q&A, but let me pray. Yeah. What you have called us to do, and you have given each of these churches just a unique calling. While we all have the same calling, God, which is to lift you high, and God, to tell everybody you know about you and how much you love them, God, that's what we all have in common. But how we do that is where we kind of do our own different, we dance to our own beat there. And so, God, I thank you for the diversity in that and the way that we carry out that calling in some unique and creative and different ways. And so thank you for these leaders and their heart for you and their heart for the next generation. And I pray, God, that you would help us go back and spend some time with our team and talk about and debate and pray over and how we want to accomplish the mission that you have specifically given us. And we know, God, that we can do none of this on our own, that we not only need our team, that we only not need, you know, time to talk about all this stuff and props to talk about all this stuff, but God, most importantly, we need you. We need your power and we need your Holy Spirit to guide us, to give us wisdom, to give us fresh insight, to give us creativity. And so I pray that for all of these churches now, God, in Jesus' name.